Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the pre-Christmas edition of Road to Cheltenham. Forget the Christmas decorations, they can do themselves. Forget the turkey, forget wrapping the kids' presents. They won't mind that they've got unwrapped presents in the tree end of the morning. It's absolutely fine. This is more important. We've reached a major crossroads in the Road to Cheltenham, and I suppose the spaghetti junction, Ruby, of the season, where lots of different roads coalesce for this cracking Christmas action. And as a result of what we see over the next couple of weeks or so, horses will be taking different roads.
Yeah, it's almost like a T-junction. Some will turn left and head on for the festival, and some will come to the end of the road and it'll be right in a different direction. So, look, it is. It's a huge part of the jump season, Christmas time, and great racing from the 26th all the way until Nace in early January, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are going to be focusing on the key Christmas action in the coming hour. Should we get straight on with it, Ruby, shall we?
Why not?
The King George is the place that we are going to start. So let's take a look at the betting. Now, a little sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Caveat. Clearly, we are talking about this on Thursday. And so there are some repeats that you might be watching now of this show, which will be nearer the time and you'll have more information than we have at this point. So at the moment in that betting, you'll see that Jerry Colombe is in it. And at the time of recording, we are assuming that horse, Ruby, will not be running here and will be going to the Savills Chase, perhaps.
Yeah, it's up in the air, and whichever race he runs in, he's going to be a big addition to it. He's a very good horse, but look, the general vibe as we're recording is that he'd probably stay on his side of the Irish Sea and not cross the channel or cross the sea even. So, yeah, look, nothing we can do about that.
Well, let's talk about how last year's race was won, shall we? Because we have the defending champion Brave Man's Game running in the race. We also have the eventual second Royal Upper Guy and the third Froden, who's run the race before. All of them reopposed. Now, how was the race run this time last year, Ruby? How did you see the King George? Remind everybody.
I wouldn't say it was a frantic King George. And the reason I don't think it was a frantic King George is because we'll see it halfway. But Frodon obviously jumped out, so did High Senior. Harry Cobden had a good position on Brave Man's Game. He lined him up a little bit wide middle of the track. But that was fine. Usually down charge, then over the first fence. But what kind of took my eye watching it back was when they got to halfway, which is passing the winning post after jumping nine, Royal Pagai is upside second. And to me, if you're going really hard, Royal Pagai wouldn't be in that position. Harry Cobden was always in a good posse on Brave Man's Game. Long Presse was right down the inside. And they came to the fore off the home turn. And they were the ones your eyes were drawn to. But you were thinking, well, Long Presse outstay Brave Man's Game. And that was my general thought, maybe watching it live. But you knew when Harry Cobden started to catch a hold of Brave Man's Game to the second last, where he lands upside, there's only going to be one winner. And he put a bit of daylight between himself and Lam Presse, going to the last when Lam Presse unseated Charlie Deutsch, and he ran out a really good winner. He beats Royal Pagai by 14 lengths. There's a reproduction of that win this year's King George. Puts you damn close.
Well, it definitely does. And we'll talk about what form all the individuals are in a few moments' time, though. But let's talk about how we expect this year's race to be run. Things are likely to be a little bit different, aren't they?
I think they will. I think there's more out and out front runners in this race. Look, it was a High Senior and Frodon last year, but there's horses that like to go a really good gallop, and none more so than Canalo. I mean, he's after obliterating two Ryanairs. All right, it was 21 and 22. He missed 23. He was really good at Punchestown in 2023. But even watching him in his second Ryanair, he jumped out. Eldorado Allen was the only horse who went to go with him early in the race. And it didn't look frantic up over the first fence in that Ryanair. But when they get down into the home straight to the second last or the last, fence seven, look at the spread on them. How far Aloho is to Eldorado Allen to the field. So he can go a really strong gallop. So he's one that's going to book out and be there thereabouts.
Okay, and then there are others as well. The Real Whacker, for example, went forward in the brown advisory.
Yeah, he did. And he's a really good jumper, which helps him in his style of running. So he booked out in the brown advisory. But it was the jump at the first and how quick he was away from the first to put him in command in that race. And that's a trait of his style of running, isn't he? He likes to get on with it. They're obviously going to have Frodon as well. So that's three that are going to be buying up there.
And then if we have a look at the early stages of the Gold Cup, we can look about at where Brave Man's Game and Hewick both were on this occasion.
Yeah, well, Hewick could be the fourth. That'll be there or thereabouts on the pace. And in the Gold Cup, when they got up to the second fence, Harry Cobden was dropping back into the box seat on Brave Man's Game, but Hewick was going forward. And he was going to be there or thereabouts. He's there or thereabouts all the way in that Gold Cup until he eventually comes down at the second last when Brave Man's Game and Galloping the Champ are going about, are setting out to have a tussle to win the race. But look, that was at 3 miles. Hewitt got to the second last, still in front. Look, he was probably a bit of value last week at 50-1, at 16-1 there or thereabouts. Now probably not the same value.
Right, okay. So that's form, that's the sort of shape of the race as we see it. So let's talk about whether those horses are able to execute their best day in the King George. And the obvious one to start with is Alaho, who we were expecting at the King George last year. He had quite a serious spleen problem, and we have only seen him once since Punchestown of 2 seasons ago, and that was in the Clonmile Oil Chase. How much of his ability do you think we saw that he retained in that race?
Look, it wasn't impressive. He went to the first fence for Paul Townend. There was only 3 runners. Janadil was the only meaningful opposition. Now, Janadil had finished second to him in a Ryanair, 14 lengths behind him. He ends up 7 lengths behind him here in Clonmel. But Alaho jumped left at the first and at the second fence. He was going a good enough gallop. The same when he got down on the second circle, he was still going out to his left with his jumper, which probably isn't ideal at Kempton. Mind you, Calho used to go left. But he did look like he got tired. He was ring rusty, jumped the second last well. I actually thought from the last fence home, he was more impressive than he was at any point on the second circuit. But he needs to be a lot better than that if he's going to win the King George. He should have improved for his first run. He has done in the past, improved plenty for a run. But I think he needed to improve a good bit. Like, after he won, or he was beaten by Shaq and Pushwa over 2 miles, he went back to the John Durkin, where he only beat Janadil by 2 lengths. And then his next start, he won in Thurles after January. So he does improve for his first run, and Janadil has been a fair yardstick to measure him against.
He does go out to his left. He did that when he won and beat a deep field in the Punchestown Gold Cup 2 seasons ago. And that is when he proved himself over 3 miles as well.
Yeah, he did. Look, I suppose he had won a 3 mile novice hurdle at Clonmel many moons ago, and then looked like maybe it was too free in the Albert Bartlett. He tried 3 miles in Punchestown where he hung left all the way as well. But he has a big engine. You're hoping that the ability is still there. He's only 9. Hopefully it is. It was a spleen injury. It's about the only thing I have in common with that at all. But it more so than legs, anything to do with their tendons or muscles. It was an internal injury. So hopefully the ability is still there.
And does he look the same kind of horse at home? Is he behaving in the same kind of way?
Oh, he is, but he's not. He wouldn't take the eye out of your head. I mean, we did run him in a 3 mile novice order. He's never exactly been one that was catching the pigeons.
And that left going, how much would that concern you? I know that you've mentioned Cortez Star won, Mr. Christian, for this show. That you mentioned Cortez Star did that, but Alaho's quite marked about it.
Yeah, but I suppose when it didn't affect him at Punchestown, he's won a John Durkin, he's won a Punchestown Gold Cup.
More galloping, surely, than Kempton, isn't it? Bigger and ranger and less tight.
Kempton's not tight, though. Kempton's
tight,
fast.
Tight is the wrong word. You're right. Tight is the wrong word.
Yeah, Kempton's fast, Kempton, because it's dead level and there's a lot of jumping there. All right, the water jump is now gone, so it's one less, but there is plenty of jumping. And once you're jumping, you tend to find Kempton is suitable once you're a good jumper.
Okay, which we definitely know Alaho is. Right, Brave Man's Game. What kind of form is he in? Because he was fabulous last year. The win in this, the second in the Gold Cup, was an outstanding performance. He even ran well at Punchestown. What's happened this season?
So he looked like he was going to win in Weatherby, and he made a mistake at the last in Gentleman's Game, beat him. But I watched him in Haydock, and away from the second fence, Daryl Jacob on landing, squeezed him back onto the bridle. And the same again at the back of the fourth fence. He had to squeeze him away to get him on the bridle. Which to me wasn't typical Brave Man's Game. He was a horse that was a good traveller. Obviously, that mistake at the last in Weatherby, he just stood a bit far back and his hind end landed on it. It cost him the race. But they were two hard enough races, Weatherby and Haydock. And you're trusting Paul Nicholls to have him 100%. Because on prep, on form, it's questionable.
He's had a sort of slightly muddled start to the season because first he wasn't going to run in the Charlie Hall and then he did, and then he wasn't going to run in the Betfair Chase and then he did. Paul Nicholls has been talking about him having taken a step forward at home, that Kempton's the ultimate track for him. He did acknowledge that maybe it's taken him a while to get over the Gold Cup. As you say, it's a non-ideal preparation going into what I think is inarguably a track that shows his best assets off best.
It is, and we're horses for courses. Trainers for races.
True. And Paul Nicholls would be that.
He is the King George. What is it, 11, 12 of them? Something ridiculous anyway. But he knows how to have a horse ready for the 26th of December.
So let's talk about his Betfair Chase conqueror, Royale Pagai, who, as we mentioned, was quite a distant sort of in second. He inherited it from his stable companion this time last year. I argued when we reviewed the Betfair Chase that he didn't actually need to improve on his best form in order to win that. What did you think?
I probably didn't, but he definitely, it was just the ease of where he was within the race. Hasn't always been the case for Royale Pagai, and he was like able to put it up the brave man's game halfway down the back. He jumped by him at the fourth last, was clear of him at the third last, and by the time he gets to the last, it's all over, and he gallops all the way to the line. Now, he does have a really good record at Haydock. He won a couple of big handicaps there with top weight. He's won a Betfair Chase there. He's a solid enough jumper. I'm just not convinced he's a Kenton horse.
I don't think he is either. I think we've got enough evidence to suggest that he isn't absolutely at his best there. Let's move on to Shishkin, shall we? He's the real imponderable in the race, isn't he? Just in general and not just because of what's happened this season. Let's talk about last season and what you made of it.
Yeah, but if you're a Shishkin fan, if you're prepared to take a few points less when he's heading to the second fence, if he's on a going day, he's a massive, massive runner. There's no doubt about that. Now, obviously, with the signs, were kind of there last year with him as he wanted a trip. Started a Ryanair. He was quite sluggish in it. Jumped very much left at the fourth fence and again at the second fence. Made a really bad mistake at the third last in the Ryanair and looks to be out of the race. And then lo and behold, when he gets to the last and gets a clear enough run from the back of it, away he goes again to chase in Boyle in. But look, that was him. Went to entry then. Lined up perfectly, jumped off in a good position down the inside. But when he gets to the second last, it looks like a high senior's home for all money. And then halfway between the last two fences, a high senior starts to falter. Shishkin, like he almost got a sniff of victory and decides to go and away with him and pings the last and runs down the high senior. But like, there's no doubt that there's a huge engine there. It's just what kind of a morning Shishkin has on the 26th.
There is that, but how good is that Aintree Bowl form? As you said, Hoisson, you looked like he had him cooked two out.
He did, but not dishing form, but the further a season goes. And it's no different to any other sport. You just have to look at the Rugby World Cup and you watch the standard of games. The longer the tournament went on, the standard dropped ever so slightly, semi-final, final, compared to what happened in the quarterfinal. So you can argue the same for horses that have raced all the way through the season. By the time they get to entry or Punchestown, they are tapering off a little bit. So I wouldn't knock it for that.
And you mentioned he goes out to his left. It doesn't bother me with him. I mean, his best performance had been at Ascot and he's unbeaten at Kempton. Yeah. You know, that's your Quarto Star type example, isn't it? Where a tendency to do that is not actually an issue.
No, I think it'd be the same for Alaha. I do.
Okay. So the start. Nicky Henderson says he's less concerned about whether Shishkin starts, and everyone will remember him sort of proudly watching on as the 1865 chase started without him down at the start. Shishkin, he looked very pleased with his work. Then Nicky Henderson tried to take him to Newcastle for the rehearsal chase. That was abandoned. The fighting fifth was mooted, but that ground was deemed too heavy for seasonal debut so close to the King George. And now he goes straight there. And Nicky Henderson is arguing he's more worried about going straight there into the King George, you know, this deep over 3 miles at Kempton, whereas you've just said it's relentless pace, than whether or not he starts.
I could see, yeah. To me, like, if you're thinking about it, you line him up in the middle between horses. You don't give him a chance to whip left or whip right. You put him between two. Now, not that the other jockeys are going to be helping whoever ride Nico to make sure he jumps off. You'll be trying to get away from him, but Nico will get himself into a position where Shishkin either has to, he won't allow him in a position where he can duck and stop. So I'd be happy enough that he'd get him away, but I would agree with Nicky that when you get into King George, a championship race, when you get up the championship level, you need to be championship ready.
And he's going there without that prep. The assistant trainer, George Daly, who's also nephew to trainer Henry Daly, is going to be down at the start leading Shishkin in. He rides him every day, knows the horse well, hoping to get him to get going well at the start.
Look, if you're used to behaviour signs, maybe, you know, when he's half thinking of going left, might be able to make sure he stays straight. He was lefty whipped in Ascot, wasn't it? He ducked out.
He dropped his shoulder left. That's right. The second time. Yeah. And of course, he's facing away from the racecourse stables again. That was just something that Nicky raised as a concern about Kempton at Ascot. Right, the wheel whacker.
Absolutely. Nicky's lobby couldn't move to start around the bend to the back of the last
bit. It can do many things, but not that. how about the case of the real whacker then? Obviously, the Brown advisory is the pro. Is the Paddy Power Gold Cup pulling up last time a con?
It probably is. It's not ideal anyway, whatever way you'd look at it. So he was a really good winner of the Brown advisory. Got himself in a good position within the race, got a really positive ride, kept jumping, and it was jumping that probably won it for him. Pinged the last fence and got another length on Jerry Kalam, who couldn't get him back by the time they get to the line. But then the Paddy Power, like, he's down to the third last fence, he's dropping out of the race by then, made a bad mistake at it, and he pulls up in the back of the shot. I suppose if he had got outpaced in the Paddy Power and come running home to finish third or fourth, he'd find it easier to make a case for him. But I think he has to bounce back. I mean, I won't fall out of the truck in Kempton if the real whacker wins the King George. But I couldn't have him on his last run anyway.
Yeah, he's in very deep, deeper than he'll ever have been before. The good news is that Pat Neville, his trainer, had his first winner this season on Sunday. So, but he hasn't, you know, doesn't have a shed load of runners. I think he's now 1 for 28, something like that. But at least they've turned a corner in that regard. Right, Hewick, how about him? I mean, he was set to win the Kerry National when he went at the last.
Off a really high mark, he arrived up and hit it hard and gave Jordan Gainford no chance of staying on him, and that was going to be a hell of a good performance in a handicap, there's no doubt about it. The last time we saw him winning a race was at Sandown, when he bolted in a race that was introduced instead of a Gold Cup one time, and then has never been removed. And then, obviously, the Galway Plate was the last time we saw him, when he was dropping a long way out of the shot when they were turning in. You know, he'd won the race the year before. I don't know. I just think that Galway, you'd like to see him run better in the Galway Plate.
And Frode on the winner in 2020, can you give him any chance?
I would struggle to.
Who's the winner for you?
I couldn't go against Alaho. But it'd be great race. Brave man's game in Shishkin. If Shishkin partakes, he's the biggest danger to them all.
So let's move on to the Savills Chase, shall we? That's the big staying chase run at Leopardstown over Christmas. We can have a look at the entries there. Galloping de Chaume, fast or slow, Jerry Kalam, who at the time of recording, we are expecting to run here if he runs at Christmas. So again, Ruby, start with the same question. If we have a look at the last two renewals, Aplutar being beaten by Galvin 2 years ago and Conflated winning last year, how are they going to be run? How were they run, rather, compared to how we're expecting this year's to be run?
In those two renewals, you had Kenboy, who likes to go forward. So Kenboy booked out and went in 2021. Aplutar dropped in. We got across the bottom. Rachel Blackmore moved up on Aplutar to get involved. Galvin got outpaced on the Davy Russell. And then, as what happens or can happen in Leopardstown, last fence to the winning post, it's almost a furlong, but it's rising ever so slightly. And the result changes. And Galvin runs down Aplutar. And Aplutar then went and won the Gold Cup. So that was that year. Following year, 2022, Conflated and Kenboy book out. He had French Dynamite, Fury Road, Galvin again. And, you know, Conflated was always up there. Now, he stayed wide. He got in control of the race. Six from home, Conflated. Jack Kennedy was in a really good position and he quickened off the front, pinged the last fence, and he was a good winner. Now, we do have Conflated. Going left-handed definitely suits Conflated as well. He jumped out left all the way and down Royal. So, from a pace point of view, you'll definitely have Conflated, who is one front runner, because there's not many more front runners in it.
No, okay. So we could have not the end-to-end gallop that we're expecting, say, in the King George?
I don't think you discern competition for pace. You have two, and to get a strong gallop, you need competition for the pace, not just one horse to jump and go. You need a couple of horses to take each other on. And here, it looks like you'll have one horse going forward. It's hard to see Gallop and the Champ fast or slow, or Jerry Calon making the running. Envoy Allen doesn't. The Blue Tar doesn't. You've conflated. Appreciated did over 2.5. Woody over 3. I'd be surprised. I am Maximus definitely won't. Neither will Capodanno. Classic Getaway, where he to run, might be up there. But that's about the only paces there.
No. From the reading out all of those potential players, we've got a deeper edition of this race, haven't we?
We have, and that's why we haven't shown you any betting, because we're doing this on Thursday, and what's declared is going to determine what shape this market takes. But but that was the introduction or the removing of the John Durkin, definitely from a Willie Mullins point of view. With the John Durkin going back to the Morgiana weekend, it allowed an extra couple of weeks to Christmas, and it looks like he's going to run Gallop and Champ.
Yeah, that's why Gallop and Champ is there. So let's have a look at his course and distance form, shall we, from the Irish Gold Cup of last season.
Yeah, and it was a decent enough performance. They went a decent enough gallop. Paul sat him in just down the inside behind his own stablemate in front. And yeah, you'd like what you saw. Jumped the third, got to the third last. There was 4 or 5 minute group in front of him. He's right behind him, but close enough to attack. Follows them across to the second last. Goes to join Fury Road on the run to the last fence. Fury Road gets lost and heads off to his left. Gallop and the Champ has to jump by him and straighten it up. And the further he was going in Leopardstown, the further he was going to win. Now, he's only beaten Fury Road, but we saw in a cross-country race last weekend. But you'd love the way he hit the line.
Yeah.
But stamina was never going to be an issue for him.
Yeah, and his jumping improved so much last season. And in the end, he also combined that sort of tactical speed that he's got with being a very strong stayer. At the end of the season, you could possibly forgive him and Brave Man's Game for being beaten by Fast or Slow at Punchestown. But since then, Fast or Slow has come out again against Galloping de Champ in the John Durkin and beaten him again.
Yeah, and look, Appreciated jumped out to make the run in the net. John Durkin, Fast or Slow, and Galloping de Champ were side by side, but Galloping de Champ's jumping let him down on this occasion. Yeah. And even at the fifth or sixth fence, top of the hill in Punchestown, the difference in Fast or Slow to Galloping de Champ was marked. Off the home turn, four of them in the line, Fast or Slow, Blue Lord, Appreciated, and Galloping de Champ, and you got the race you wanted for a Group 1, Grade 1 even. Ping's the second last, but the faster horse and the horse that jumped better on the day was Fast or Slow. I didn't think he was a faster horse. No. I thought watching Fast or Slow at Punchestown last year, he actually wanted every yard of three. So if you're a Fast or Slow fan, you're entitled to think you're going to be better at Leopardstown over 3 miles than you were at Punchestown.
And you're getting, looking at the betting at the time that I'm speaking, second favourite behind Galloping de Champ. I realise that could be changed by the time you're watching. But Galloping de Champ, how about the Brave Man's Game argument that Paul Nicholls was making, that he might have taken a while to recover from the Gold Cup?
Possibly. We've seen Brave Man's twice. Galloping de Champ has shown no signs of that at home. But just didn't like his jumping in Punchestown. My horse that took the sight out of my eye when he ran Leopardstown, the beginner's chase. You were thinking, oh my God, as a novice, how flamboyant and exuberant he was last year, how measured he was. This year, he was going stuttery, backing off. You're thinking, that's just not him.
Has he had a lot of schooling since, I take it?
Willie Mullins trains him.
Is that a yes or a no?
Say he's had too much. He knows how to jump. It's confidence he needs.
Okay. Let's move on to Jerry Calon. Now, of the two targets that Gordon Elliott could choose from this Christmas, is this the better one for him, in your opinion?
Well, you look at the races, the more you would think, no. Would you prefer to take on Brave Man's Game, who's questionable at the minute? We know he's a very good horse. Alaho, who's had one run in 18 months, and Shishkin, who failed to start the last time. So if you were simply breaking it down, you would say, no, you got to run the King George. Now, the other side of that coin is that even for Irish horses, Willie's definitely bringing Alaho, but the tracks on the East Coast are a good bit shorter to get, or West Coast, sorry, are a good bit shorter for us to get to. Aintree, Cheltenham are a hell of a lot closer than Kempton. And you get into Christmas traffic as well. They have to go before Christmas, so Kempton's a good bit further away. And that would be a factor, I would imagine.
The two tracks comparison?
The tracks, I would think that nature of Leopardstown probably suits Jerry Calon better than Kempton, and it's the fences. It's even the last five and a half furlongs and you jump the last ditch in Leopardstown, you have 5 furlongs to run with 2 fences. You go back 5 furlongs in Kenton, you're probably at the 4th last fence. So it's 4-2. So like jumping is really important at Kenton. It's important in every race, but it's definitely heightened at Kenton how you jump. And you watched Jerry last year in the Brown Advisory. So you get up to the 4th last. And if you only look at him versus the real whacker in this race, the real whacker is in and out much quicker than Jerry Colum. And the same with the last fence. You know, Jerry Colum doesn't do anything wrong. It's just the speed with which the real whacker lands. And it gets him another length that holds him off Jerry Colum. And then when you watch him in Down Royal, like he needed every yard of it. Now, I know he got the wrong side, he conflated, but he needed every yard of the 3 miles to beat basically a 2.5 miler in by Ellen.
Yeah. So that stamina, that late strong run that he has is going to be advantaged by being in Leopardstown. And he's going to be if he's in touch, he's going to be a danger to all, isn't he?
Well, huge danger. You get off the bend in Leopardstown, it rises into the straight and with only one fence. That's a lot of galloping with very little jumping, which means you get no chance to slow it down. The horse doesn't get any breather. You're on it and Stayers win there.
And the winner is?
Oh, I'm sticking with galloping because of my allegiances to the place, but it's a good race.
Yeah, Fast or Slow and Jerry Colum, both the rising horses.
Oh, yeah, and like we haven't spoken about Envoy Allen or Clutar, who were in there too. Conflated won the race last year. It's just huge depth in that. It's a great race.
Mm. Let's move on to the Paddy's Rewards Club Chase, which is over 2 mile 1. It's a two mile race in all. It's slightly longer than that, and it rewards staying, doesn't it? You've been teaching me that this race in particular rewards a staying 2 miler.
2 miles at Leopardstown, I always think does reward horses that can stay. I think if you can, it is, because it's not as fast as, and it's 2 miles in 1. And I think that's going to be a problem for some of them.
Okay, so let's talk about the pace of the race this time around. Last year, of course, it was Blue Lord who beat Captain Guinness 11 lengths into second with Shaq and Pessoir back in third. Let's talk about how you think the race this year is going to be run through the prism of that race.
You have Captain Guinness, a gentleman to me as well. Again, he's on the white cap over on the far side. Captain Guinness has become much more settled as he's got a bit older. Rachel Blackmore's now with the drop him in. But you're definitely going to have gentleman to me rocking forward. So he'll be bang up there. Obviously, in the John Durkin appreciated made the running. Now, I'm not sure whether he'll come down and trip in this or go up and trip to the Savills. That's up in the air for debate. But Dysart Dynamo definitely won't be going up and trip. So he's in here as well. He likes the front run. He only has one way of running. So you'd have plenty of pace. And they're both in the 1 yard, but the two of them are keen.
So this could be a more contested pace than last year?
Every chance it could be, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But mind you, gentlemen is probably getting a little bit easier to ride. He's starting to look like a horse that can take a lead, but he did take a couple of runs last year.
But he did, absolutely, yeah. Let's talk about the individuals, starting with Captain Guinness, who has begun the season with success, and this could be his Grade One chance.
It could be, but even if you look at last year's race, so when they get across to the second last, Shaq and Pessoir is coming down the outside. He makes a mistake, and Captain Guinness lands in front. You're thinking he's going to get his day. But immediately your eye is drawn to Blue Lord behind him, who switches inside him, going to the last Blue Lord has gone by him. Blue Lord pings it, but Captain Guinness then fades and gets beaten a long way by Blue Lord. Mm. I just wonder, he won the 4-3 at Navan, which is 2 miles. Most chases in Navan are actually 2-1 as well. But in the 4-3, they start and took the second last first. It's the bang square 2 miles. And I just wonder, is 2-1 really stretching?
I was going to put the same thing to you. I mean, I think he's a very consistent horse, particularly these days. He's become much more tractable. Second in the Queen Mother Champion Chase, second in the Celebration Chase to John Bonn, as you mentioned, that win in the Fortria. But does this just stretch him a little bit? And then there's Gentleman Demi, whose jumping fell apart in this race last year. And as you say, he took a long time to find his stride, albeit he has won the Dublin Chase.
Yeah, he has. He jumped a lot differently at the Dublin Chase. He got into a great rhythm. Danny Mullins rode him. You can watch him in the back straight. The 5th fence, brave, like a 2 miler again at the 6th. 3rd last, absolutely pinged it. And he was home for all money by the time he got to the last fence. Then he beat Dunvegan. Blue Lord was in there as well. Similar kind of form, but I just thought that was a good performance. But that was his 4th run of the season. Mm-hmm. He'd unseated at Naas. He'd ran the Tingle Creek. He'd ran at Leopard Centre Christmas. He took a few runs last year.
Whereas this time he's going to have to do it first time out. He's owned by JP McManus, as is Dino Blue. First of all, are they both likely to run, do you think?
I would think they are. There's not much any other options for them to go to. The Desert Orchid is now a limited handicap, so I couldn't see, they won't be going there. So Dino Blue, yeah, I'd imagine she'd go here. And on the ratings, she's probably entitled to take her chance. Usually, we look at Dina Blue and you think, really good jumper, until you look at last year's Grand Annual and you watch the last two fences. Mistake at the second last, Mazzucato gets to her. She still looks like she's going to win going to the last. And how she stands up at the last is probably a reflection of how easily she was going. If she was getting a bit empty, there's no way she would have stood. And then you move away from that. You go back to her at Punchestown, where she comes from behind Douglas Talking. It looked well handicapped to win a handicap there. And then she goes to Naas this year. Fieldor is behind her, who chased home El Fabiolo at Cork last week. And her jumping was spectacular. Really measured, really action, really accurate. Fourth last, third last, and again at the last fence. She is a really good jumper, and she looks to be an improver.
Yeah, she really impressed me there. She beat Fieldor, and Fieldor has obviously gone on and run really well behind El Fabiolo, hasn't he? Where were you aligned? I mean, I felt this was a difficult race. We've highlighted what we think might be the flaw in Captain Guinness, even though I like the horse.
I'm coming down on Dino Blue's side, and I mean, she's spot on at the ratings with Captain Guinness, 162 to 155, getting the mares at £7 allowance. She's dead square with him officially.
So we asked you the same question. Who wins the Paddy's Rewards Club Chase? We had a lovely picture of Captain Guinness in the background as well. And this was your answer. Captain Guinness, 43%, Appreciated, 28%, Gentleman Demi, 15%, and Dino Blue, only 40%, the outsider of four there. And this is what you all thought. So James Stark says that Captain Guinness was far more impressive this year than last year in the Fortria. And he's made the argument about the Queen Mother Champion Chase and Celebration Chase as the best form on offer. This is his day for a Grade One. I can see that, just worried about that final furlong. Tom says he wouldn't trust Captain Guinness to put two career best efforts back to back. I'm not sure I agree with that part, Tom. I think he's been very consistent the last three times. Appreciate it, jumped and travelled the best he ever has last time, over 2.5. If he gets into a rhythm, he could be difficult to pass over at this trip. What do you think? Or difficult to pass at this trip, sorry.
It could be, but he didn't look quick enough for 2 miles last year.
Didn't. Dino Blue for Phil, and he makes the same case as you about the £7 inferior to Captain Guinness that gets the mayor's allowance. Six-year-old, lightly raced. Appreciate it, too slow over 2 miles now. Gentleman Demi, too inconsistent. Phil, are you Ruby in disguise? We'll find out, Phil, when you do analyse this.
So lads, apparently I meant to be asking people at home to subscribe to the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel.
It's like Niall's a false start. Shut up! It's not a false
start. You've described this day as possibly your worst day ever.
Have you ever heard of Ruby Walsh?
Take some juice.
A John Wayne lookalike on him, more than likely at the same time.
Wow. Second horse isn't worth the mares.
This is expensive bars, Mark. Yeah.
A fence at Cheltenham where you go like that.
That'll be an entry, yeah?
I cut your nuts off. What do you think had happened to you?
So for Analyse this week, we're going to have a look back at the December Gold Cup and two very different ways of trying to achieve the very same thing. Ilva Daughter jumps out in front on the left in the pink. Fugitive is dropped in the purple colours under Gavin Sheen at the back. And they went a really strong gallop, but a level gallop most of the way in this race. And Ilva Daughter was always on the front end, whereas Fugitive made a mistake here at the second last fence with a circuit to go. And that puts him even further back. But from Gavin Sheen's point of view, when they're round the bend past the stands and Ilva Daughter and Ferrero Bamboo are striding away, there's very little he can do. He's looking up, hoping the ones in front of him are going to keep him close enough. But they use the undulation. They roll down into the back straight, Bryony Frost and Charlie Deutsch. And when they come down the hill to the third last, they're a long way clear of the Fugitive at the purple in the back. Ilva Daughter's over the fence and away and away. And here comes Fugitive in the next parish. But off the bend, Bryony decides to open up Ilva Daughter, or not even open up, to try and maintain the momentum. And she squeezes him off the bend to get away from Ferrero Bamboo and extends him to the second last. But unfortunately, when she gets to the second last, Ilva Daughter's not on a great stride. he is gets in tight and loses a considerable amount of momentum. Whereas Gavin Sheehan, who has kept his powder dry, is now starting to fly home. Now, Gavin still realises he's going to need a bit of luck. This is in the lap of the gods for him, but all he can do is try. Briney has regathered Il Ridotto going to the last fence. He's backing off. But the momentum lost at the second last now has him really slowed down. When Fugitive comes to him in a second, Il Ridotto does start to rally, but he's running out of petrol, and the rally is only for 100 yards before Fugitive gets on top and gets his head in front to win by short head or a nose. Two different ways of doing it. Gavin Sheehan is the hero because he won and Briony Frost isn't, but there's only a nose in there, and the second last fence was all the difference.
So maybe what did you think about the decisions that the riders made? What were the race winning and losing moves? And clearly we're talking about very fine margins because this was a very narrow finish.
Yeah, Gavin was riding probably more on instinct. He got caught further back than he wanted to be, and when he made that mistake early in the race, it put him on the back front. So he had no plan. He's just riding on instinct then and hoping he gets lucky. Whereas Briony set out with a plan, and she very nearly pulled it off. Now, a better jump at the second last, and Gavin Sheehan doesn't get there. But when you jump and go hard, people are always going to pick holes in.
That is the jockey's perspective that you've explained there. Let's have a look at it from a data perspective, shall we, and have a look at what Race IQ have to say about it. And we've zeroed in on the second last and the last fence. So the second last is fence 16 here.
Yeah, it's the second last. And I suppose when you look at the entry speeds, Fugitive was coming at over 33 miles an hour to it. Il Ridotto was under 30, 29.97. And the speed loss, 3.8 seconds for Fugitive, 6.24 for Il Ridotto. Time is in the envelope, but it swung around to a margin of 3.3 lengths and a gain for Fugitive over Il Ridotto at the second last. But crucially, it was the momentum that was lost. And again, at the last fence, because of that momentum lost, Fugitive is 29 miles an hour, a little over going to it. Il Ridotto's down to 27, loses more speed, Il Ridotto does, than Fugitive. And that turns into a 2.8 length swing for Fugitive again. I know there's lots of figures there, but the mistake, the loss of momentum at the end of a race just made it so hard for Il Ridotto to try and pick up again. And the effort of jumping at the last two fences was the difference in winning and losing.
Okay, we're having a look at the second last and the last slowed down with those helpful figures there.
And you look at the amount of speed for Fugitive, or Il Ridotto, sorry, at the second last. He loses over 6 miles an hour, and you can see it in his stride. And even to the last fence, even though Briony spots a really good stride and she has the revs up on him, it's laboursome through the air and it's slow away. Whereas Fugitive just shoots through the air, and you can see that gap closing. That speed, the momentum, you talk about fractions, that's what fractions are. And if you're running fast, late fractions, it's amazing what you can make up. But if you're running slow, late fractions, it's also amazing what you can lose.
Now, obviously, we're still learning about what all of this data means. I certainly am. Some people might have a look at those figures and say that, given the way that Il Ridotto exits the final fence quicker than he entered it, that actually that shows that he was idling, and maybe had Fugitive got to him sooner. I mean, we know that Fugitive can be, he looked like he had a little bit of a think before he went past, that maybe the race might have panned out differently, you know, if Il Ridotto had kind of got there sooner, if you see what I mean.
I know what you're saying. And you can see that from halfway after the last fence, when Fugitive does get to Il Ridotto, he definitely rallies, but he only had 100 yards of a rally before he was out of petrol. So I don't think it was idling, getting lonely. I just think it was coming to the end of a really big effort. And when he dug in, he could really dug in for 100 yards or dig in for 100 yards when he needed to sustain and repel the challenge for about 150.
Okay, well, let's move on, shall we, to the novice chasers. Before we look at the big novice chasers over the Christmas period, we can reflect on what we've seen over the last 7 days. And one of the key matchups, and again, we can use some Race IQ data to have a look at this, was in the novices chase at Cheltenham last Friday, where Ginny's Destiny was able to beat Grey Dawning. But the pivotal moment was a mistake from the latter at the second last.
Yeah, it was, but when you look at it on the whole, Genie's Destiny jumped out in front. And even at the first event, you can see how much quicker Genie's Destiny was than Grey Dawning. Now, when they got into the back straight, Harry Skelton was having to go for big jumps in Grey Dawning just to keep up with Genie's Destiny. 10th fence, same at the 11th fence. But at the sixth last, the last ditch, Genie was a good bit quicker than Grey Dawning, even when both middle and tighter strides. Third last, Harry Cobden was able to slow Genie's Destiny down to jump the third last. And then off the bend to the second last, Harry Skelton is coming to Harry Cobden, and Grey Dawning gets it all wrong. And that's a huge difference. Genie's Destiny then goes and jumps the last well. But when you look at the data and then you watch the winning distance, Harry Skelton and Grey Dawning gets back to within three parts of a length of Harry Cobden and Genie's Destiny. But the second last fence cost him way more.
Yeah, he lost 2.9 lengths against Genie's Destiny at that fence, 1.64 lengths on the field medium, and lost 9.06 miles per hour comparing the landing to the entry speed. So that is how significant that was. And it kind of backs up what the eye told you. The flip side is, though, is that Genie's Destiny is an incredibly good jumper, and his straightforwardness and the fact that his jumping is an asset is going to win him more than his fair share of races for his entire career, surely.
Absolutely. But that's what you have to factor in. When you're looking at Grey Dawning and look at his figure and watch his jumping on the whole through the race, he wants to be going further. He needs to be going a fraction slower to jump. He jumped better than Haydock.
They're going up in trip. He did do better at Haydock. They're going up in trip. They both might meet again over 3 miles at Warwick. Now, Warwick is a tricky jumping track. That is surely going to, even though it's 3 miles, that is surely going to suit Genie Stephanie.
Well, the five across the side in Warwick puts a huge emphasis on jumping. But yeah, you would have to think so, unless you got really testing ground. I just think Grey Dawning needs to be going a bit slower.
They're both likeable horses, I think. And Paul Nicholls of the view that Genie's Destiny is just pushing under to Stay Away Faye and Hermes Allen. He's got to make that jump up to that level, but he's improving all the time.
He has the yardsticks to judge them against, and he's definitely going in the right direction, Genie's Destiny.
We had another excellent novice chasing performance at Cheltenham over the weekend, and it came in against seasoned handicappers from 5-year-old Broadway Boy, who is the apple of Willie Twist and Davis's eye. He bought him, and he's also campaigned him well.
He has. And look, Sam was good and positive on him, jumped him out to make the run and jumped the first fence really well to claim that position, I suppose you could say. Round to the fourth last, first time, good solid jump, tricky enough fence. Protector that was really free at the back, but Broadway Boy did show his novice tendencies in the middle of the race. He hit the 15th a good thump, and then when he got to the last ditch, he paddled to get his way over it. But then, you know, when they all bunched up at the 19th, he was able to hang in there with handicappers. He was really good at second last, and again at the last fence, really good jumping. Just the one or two novice ones in the middle, but he's a horse going the right direction. But he had a good mark, he's won a good pot, and he's only 5-year-old.
Yeah, he responded really well, I think, to that when his jumping became a bit shaky. I loved his jumping in the closing stages. Willie Twiston Davis, he is his father's son, is thinking big. He's thinking of going to the Fleur-de-Lis chase, and that means he could bump into the light of Protectorat, L'Empressé, Stage Star. And I think I'm right in saying that means that he'd be giving weight to Protectorat and L'Empressé, Broadway Boy, in that race. So that's over 2 miles, 6.5 furlongs at Lingfield. And then he's thinking... And then he's thinking Brown Advisory rather than National Hunt Chase, obviously, at the festival. Where would you go?
I'm not a racehorse trainer. It looks like a Brown Advisory horse, or he could be a National Hunt Chase horse. I'd be letting him tell me in time. I wouldn't be making hard and fast plans just yet, but he's only 5, rising 6. 8 over facing.
I really liked the debut over fences of Blood Destiny. I loved how he gained ground at his fences at Nace.
He was really good. Obviously 4 or 5 in a couple of weeks' time, but he was really good. Went to the first fence, clapped eye in it, got in tight, but he was really fast out through the air. And the same at the second fence. Now, he had Hartwood in behind him, who'd run really well in his debut. And look, the sixth fence is really good. 9th fence. It was just really good to watch. He was so sure what he was doing until he got to the second last, and he did hit the second last a good rub, but then was good again at the last and strode out to the line to win well. That was over 2.5. You'd imagine the obvious place to go was the Killiney, I think it's called, at Punchestown, early in January, but it was a really taking performance, and he has youth on his side. Doesn't get the same weight allowances in the UK, but Really good, a good performance in his jumping. He was at school like a horse on springs, and he brought that to the race course.
He really did. And he looked more tractable. I mean, he got himself in a bit of a state in the Triumph Hurdle, didn't he?
He did, but he hadn't done a Cork or a Fairy House prior to that. So whether that was just the travelling, the crowd, the atmosphere, Triumph is on Gold Cup Day. Yeah, maybe that has all got to him, but he's only young. He'll get over it. He'll get used to it.
He faces bigger tests ahead, and bigger tests are coming rather more quickly for other novice chasers. So we're going to have a quick think about the key novice chases over the Christmas period, starting with the Quarto Star, which is run on Boxing Day at Kempton over the King George course and distance. There are the horses that are entered in it. Who do you see here as being the key players?
Obviously, Giovinco, after his run at Sandown behind Stay Away Fay. I think a really strongly run race at Kempton will probably suit him well. Hermes Allen made a really pleasing debut at Newbury, jumped solid on the whole, and he's a very good horse. I don't know. I wish we had the decks. If Willie's going to run either or, maybe Grange Clare West. He won at Nace. Thought he jumped well. Just love to see him back in upper performance. He didn't do that last year after he won a maiden hurdle. Classical Dream is in there as well. We don't know what's going to run, but it's a decent race. And of course, you have the French horse, Ile Francais,
who's quite difficult to get a handle on. I think Giovinco is going to be suited very much by Kempton. You know, we know that he's got that sort of tactical pace that's enabled him to stay up there. Hermes Allen, I know it was his debut at Newbury, but he got outpaced a little, didn't he? And then came home very strongly. I know he's going up in trip.
He's going up in trip, which should suit him. But he was chasing a fair front runner. Horse likes to get on with it.
Nickelback.
I'd say it was a good first effort of offences. He'd have learned plenty.
Yes, and he, of course, runs here with Nappers Hill, his stable companion, having been sidelined. That was the horse that was meant to be running here. But unfortunately, he's picked up an injury which might count him out for the rest of the season. So moving to Leopardstown, we've got the Racing Post Novice Chase over 2 mile 1. And as I understand it, Ruby, this race is being axed because the view is from the Irish Jumps Pattern Committee that there are too many similar kind of races, horses having overlapping entries in the Faheen Chase and also in the Neville Hotels.
Yeah, I'm not sure which group it came from, but reading the statement in the paper anyway, Lydia, it looks like the 2 mile and 1 novice Leopardstown will be axed and 3 will become 2. Now they're going to review the distances as well of both races. News coming in the new year. Probably the 3 novice chases is too many at Christmas, but I'm not sure they're actually the right one.
I mean, surely it's the 3 mile. I mean, if you're a stayer, you go to the Faheen, don't you, for 2 mile, 3.5 at Limerick. And if you're a quicker horse, you want that 2 mile race.
I couldn't agree more with you, but look.
And, you know, again, you know, and a 3 mile novice chase is likely to be of lesser quality than a 2 mile novice chase at this stage in a novice season. I can't agree.
I don't agree with it. I was involved in some of those discussions. It's news to me.
Okay. All right. Let's move that to one side to discuss in the new year and talk about this year's events. Who are the key players for you, Ruby?
Definitely back to the Navan Beginners Chase. Facile Vega and In the Pocket. Facile Vega holds the upper hand, beat In the Pocket by 3 lengths on this occasion. He was 3 lengths in front of him in the Supreme and they're finished 2nd and 4th. And I think there's more to come from In the Pocket. So I'd say they're the 2 main players after In the Pocket was supplemented for this contest.
Yeah, and that race has been since backed up by Spillane's Towers victory, but there are plenty of others potentially in there. And we've talked about overlapping entries, which I take that point. If we move to Limerick for the Faheen Novices Chase, Gaelic Warrior is the one that immediately springs to mind that this race is surely really well suited to.
It does. Going right-handed trip would look ideal at 2.5 miles. He was really good at Punchestown. But there's some really good entries in here. American Mike beat Factophile over 2.5 at Navan. He'd be an interesting runner. And Corbis Cross, he holds this entry and the Nevilles. But look, his novice chase at Fairy House looked a really decent contest. He's behind Grange Clare West at Nace. He improved to win at Fairy House. He'd be a big runner there too.
We're going to learn so much, I think, from these races. And then the Neville Hotels, the race that we would axe. But nonetheless, it looks like a very competitive contest. It's got the likes of Favre de Chandu and Flooring Porter. Gavin Cromwell confirming at Cheltenham last week when he was there that Flooring Porter would be running here.
Yeah, back going his favourite direction, left-handed. But look, he did throw it away at Punchestown a lot. But I thought Fabry and Sean Dua come forward from his run at Galway behind Affidel Fury as well. So I think he's a very good horse. He could have Classical Dream or Glenn's Crow West, or possibly both as well. Yeah. You know, they are deep contests. Classical Dream was really good at Thurles, jumped like an absolute buck. Perhaps he'll go to Kempton. But look, there's four novice races we've touched on, Lydia. And look, they're going to be really good races. They won't be massive fields, but they'll be good races to watch.
They'll be really informative. And also, we've got the Wayward Lad Grade 2 as well on the day after Boxing Day at Kempton. That's over 2 miles. So plenty of talk to talk about in the new year. So we're going to sign off with the hurdlers, but I should just mention that, of course, we're looking forward to last season's Supreme winner, Marine National, making his debut over fences, hopefully, in the beginner's chase at Leopardstown. Again, so much to talk about when we return to you in the new year. Let's start by having a look at the Paddy Power Future Champions Novices Hurdle, shall we? And having a think about that, it's over 2 miles. It's a grade one at Leopardstown over Christmas. Who do you see from those entries there, Ruby, as being the key contenders?
Well, Down Memory Lane has been really well back, Lydia, since the entries or the forfeits come out for this race. He was an impressive winner at Down Royal and he beat Fast Felix, Derek O'Connor rode him. He won a bumper at Fairy House as well. He's been very good. Daddy Longlegs is to the forefront of the market for Willie Mullins. But I thought, looking at the anti-post prices, It's For Me was overpriced. Fifth in the Cheltenham bumper, fifth behind the Dream to Share again at Punchestown. And he beat Caldwell Potter in a maiden hurdle at Punchestown. Caldwell Potter was subsequently gone to Navan and absolutely bolted in. So thought they were big runners. Maybe brighter days ahead as well. From the filly section, she was good at Down Royal, but it's a deep enough contest.
It is. I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to the Formby Novice Hurdle, which is a new grade one at Aintree on Boxing Day. It replaces the Tolworth, which is usually run at Sandown on the first Saturday of the new year. And I like this race. They've been rewarded with some really good looking entries. We've got the Royal Bond winner, Farron Glory. We've got Look Away, who's just been second in the Great Wood, a second season novice. And a couple of novices I really like. One of them, Django Bai, who I think did well to win at Ascot. And this one, Cannock Park. I think he's going to be so much better suited by Aintree compared with Cheltenham, where he won here.
Yeah, he did. And he was a bit wayward at Cheltenham, ran left, ran a bit right. The only, we don't know, right? I can't remember it anyway, but Aintree on the 26th of December could be really deep ground.
Yeah.
And this could be slow motion stuff. But Cannock Park, he definitely ran to 130 at Cheltenham. He beat in a Tom Dew. And yeah, if he becomes a little bit more rideable, he's a big engine.
So those are exciting. There'll be other excellent novice hurdle contests as well over the festive period. But we've also got some grade ones amongst the horses that have already graduated to that level, starting this very Saturday at Ascot with the Long Walk Hurdle. Let's have a look at the betting for that. West Balboa and Crambo, who are rising stars potentially in this division. They've been jousting it out for favouritism. Of course, Paisley Park won this race when it was rescheduled at Kempton on Boxing Day of last year. Champ had beaten previously in the long distance hurdle. They're back again, as is Dashiell Drasher. What do you make of these upstarts, Ruby? The likes of Crambo, who ran third at Haydock last time we saw him.
And Botox has. But when you watch Crambo at Haydock, so going to the third last, Conor Brace is riding him. He's on the outside and he looks pretty much like he's flat to the boards. And he does wander in behind the other horses going to the second last because he's hanging to his left. And he eventually gets out to get running when he gets to the last hurdle. Now, Slate Lane is home for all money at that stage. Fine Margin is chasing up in second. And Crambo is the one that's finishing with Gowell Road. But I would have thought myself, Paisley Park, Dashiell Drasher, Botox Has, Champ, etc., would win off 139.
It's an insult, isn't it, this betting? It's an insult, surely. I'm outraged. How about the likes of Boa?
Can you imagine what Emma Lavelle is thinking and Jeremy Scott?
John O'Neill.
West Balboa, look, was a good winner at Aintree. Last two hurdles were bypassed, only a three-runner race, dropped in last. Miller's Bank made the run and blew up a storm, challenged on one side, West Balboa on the other. She quickened up well, passing what should have been the last hurdle and went away to win. She was obviously a good winner at Aintree in a handicap hurdle back in April time when she beat Pounding Poet and Millie Green. But yeah, I again think she has to go and improve a good bit. She's won her handicap off 135, won off 142, Predict Champs at 157. Paisley Park, 157. Botox Hat, 152. Dashiell Dashiell, 159. Like, I know I'm always giving out about the handicapper, but is he that wrong that Crambo and West Balboa are going to do the business?
And Champ, it goes particularly well fresh as well. Let's move on to the Christmas hurdle at Leopardstown over Christmas, the Jack de Bromhead Christmas hurdle over 3 miles. Now, of course, Home by the Lee won this last year. What did you make of his comeback?
Yeah, his comeback was only okay at Navan. He looked big and round, but he won this race last year. JJ Slevin rode him very wide on the track. Florian Porter was in front down the inside. He got upsides on him at the third last. He was in front at the second last, and he dug in deep to repel Ashdale Bob, Florian Porter, and meet and greet. His comeback run was okay, but he'll have to have improved from it, I think. And I think Gordon's runner, Irish Point, is really interesting here.
Yeah, what do you make of him? He's going up in trip, of course, to 3 miles.
Yeah, I think he's really relaxed the way you're going. He won 2.5 at Aintree. Already got beaten in the Lawlers over 2-3 by Champ Kiley, but I think he's a nice, relaxed horse. He's a good jumper. He's not flamboyant. He's a good, solid jumper. I think he'd be an easy ride in a 3 mile race, and he has a turn of foot at the end of it. I have no interest in riding him, but if I was riding, he's the one I'd like to be riding.
Potentially, we've got Osterian Falange, who was a good second to Classical Dream at Punchestown. Also, Sir Gerhard, potentially switching back to hurdles if he runs.
Potentially, yeah. Look for a Ballymore winner. Obviously, the hardest, it didn't look like he stayed in the Brown Advisory, but it was only his second run of the season. Had a heavy enough fall at Nace. I don't know if he's going back off hurdles or not.
If we drop down to 2 miles, we've got Constitution Hill, hurrah, returning in the Christmas hurdle at Kempton. A new contender in Rubord. Do you see the outcome being any different to last year when Constitution Hill was brilliant?
No, he was brilliant. And obviously Highway 102 made the run in. Constitution Hill took it off him at the fort, and he won as he liked. Rubord has a proven footrunner, and I imagine Paul Nichols would be in for second at worst. So he'd be riding his horse to the best of his ability to win the other race. I think that'll suit Constitution Hill, and I wouldn't be surprised if Nico takes it easy on him.
Okay, and then we've got the Matheson, of course, at Leopardstown over 2 miles. Again, more of the same kind of horses. Are we expecting this to be a one-sided contest rather than the potential clash that the entries suggest it could be?
I don't know. Obviously, Imperial Pass is still in there with Stateman. That race is not for another 8 days or 9 days as we were recording. But look, Stateman was very good in it last year. She's Electric made the running. He got to the front, going to the second last, which was the last hurdle they jumped, and he sprinted when they passed the last hurdle. It could well be, I don't know where, can't think of his name now, Imperial Pass is going to go.
Any chance Vauban would be there?
I would be surprised if Vauban is there. He's back from Australia. Absurd might run all right in a novice hurdle, but I think Vauban definitely looked a bit lighter when he got back than Absurd.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out what runs in the Matheson. Let's hope it is a good contest. That's our quick whip through what's going on this Christmas. We, of course, will be back in the new year to talk about it every Thursday at 9 o'clock, starting on the 4th of January. That is it for this week. If you want more, though, my column is available online on racingtv.com/road to Cheltenham. And we will be back for an online special. This will be on the Racing TV YouTube page after racing on the 29th. There's going to be a mashup between Ruby and I, the Road to Cheltenham team, and the Let's Talk Racing team of Josh Stacey and Andrew Blair White. Make sure you join us for that. But in the meantime,
do we have to be nice to them? Do we?
Well, I mean, I don't know why you'd change a habit of a lifetime, Ruby. So you know, you just be yourself.
Thanks. Happy Christmas.
Be nice and say Happy Christmas to the nice people watching. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas.
See you in the new year for this show, and we'll see you for that special on the 29th.
Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.